Hi, I'm Jamie Poisson, and I host CBC's daily news podcast, Front Burner. Every weekday, we set out to have a conversation about the biggest Canadian and global issues that you want to know more about, from politics to culture to online stuff. We spend a lot of time on the show thinking about the best ways to have those conversations and searching for the smartest people to have them with. That's it. That's the sell. I hope you'll tune in.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. The choreographer Justin Peck has had a big career so far. In 2013, when he was only in his mid-20s, a dance critic at the New York Times called him one of the most important classical ballet choreographers to have emerged this century. He was the second person in the New York City Ballet's history to be named its resident choreographer, and he won a Tony for his first time on Broadway. If you don't get to see dance on stage that often, I mean, me too. You know, I remember growing up in St. John's, there wasn't a whole lot of, there was dance to see. I just never really got out to see it. You still may have seen Justin's work, though, in dance sequences and Steven Spielberg's West Side Story or Bradley Cooper's Maestro. But now, Justin's doing something really interesting. And as a 37-year-old here on the radio, something pretty exciting as a millennial. Justin's new production is going to Broadway. It's called Illinois. It's Justin's interpretation of the seminal album Illinois by the singer-songwriter Sufjan Stevens. You might remember songs like this.
I fell in love again. All things go, drove to Chicago. All things know, we sold our clothes to the state. I don't mind, I don't mind. I made a lot of mistakes in my mind, in my mind.
That's a little of Chicago from Sufjan Stevens' album, Illinois. The album, you might remember, came from a time when the singer-songwriter Sufjan Stevens had this idea that he was going to make an album for every state of the United States. He never really got around to making more than two. But that album is beautiful, full of stories about the World's Fair and Frank Lloyd Wright. I mean, even the story about John Wayne Gacy. And Justin Peck has turned this into a full production set around a campfire as people sing each other the songs and stories on Sufjan's album. Q guest host Talia Schlanger got to talk to Justin about it just before the show opened on Broadway last week. Here's their conversation.
Justin Peck, welcome to Q.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad to get to talk to you. And we're going to get to Illinois in just a sec. But first, I read that when you were a teenager, you were a fan of Sufjan Stevens and you wrote him a letter.
Yeah, I mean, I've had this kind of like multi-layered relationship to Sufjan and his work. And, you know, I actually first fell in love with his music through the Illinois album. So when that came out in 2005, and I was just a teenager in school at the time, it really blew me away. And I became a fan from that point forward. And then when I started to make work as a dance maker, as a choreographer, which was a few years later, I wrote him a letter because I was in pursuit of collaborators who were living, breathing human beings in the world, and also collaborators who I felt inspired by and felt like had the ability to compose music for dance and for theater and for storytelling. And that's something that I felt about Sufjan and his work. And so I wrote him a letter and just sort of gushed about what his music meant to me and what I was trying to do as an artist in the world. And I actually never heard back, but I did receive some really nice correspondence and interactions with his record label.
And spoiler alert, I mean, you've had contact with him since. You've collaborated a whole lot. And I want to talk more about your collaboration together in a moment. But first, I want to go a little bit further back in your own dance career. What was the first thing that you saw or that you experienced that brought dance into your life?
Oh, well, my entry into dance and the arts and culture in general was really through theater. So when I was a young person, I would go every summer with my family to New York City. My dad is like third generation New York City, born and raised. So he would bring us back and kind of show us around his old stomping ground. And within that experience, we would go and see like four or five musicals and plays. And it was just like this entire world that opened up to me And I was particularly moved by the musicals. So the shows that had music and movement and dance energy and singing within them. And the show that I would say that really set me on this lifelong exploration of dance was called Bring in the Noise, Bring in the Funk, which is by George C. Wolfe and Savion Glover. And it's a kind of history of the Black experience in America told through tap dance. And I was really enamored by tap dance as an expression. It's a kind of dance form that's a hybrid of physical movement, but also like being your own musician, because you can hear the rhythms and the sounds created by the tap shoes. So that was something I was really drawn to as a young person, and I started to train quite intensely in tap dance as an art form. And then, of course, that led me to other dance forms and doing theater as a young person growing up. And yeah, that's how I made my way.
So if you're a kid and you grew up like going to New York City to see shows and being so inspired, then you're 15 years old and you move there to actually study ballet formally. What was that first year like for you?
Man, that was incredible, eye-opening, felt like the first day of the rest of my life. it was just like a really beautiful coming-of-age experience I had, which I'm from San Diego, California, so it's was a beautiful place to grow up, but quite different from New York City. And I just felt so alive and that my senses were so vividly engaged at that time. And I was lucky to just have the opportunity to come to New York City, of course, studying at the School of American Ballet at Lincoln Center. But also what came with that was a lot of opportunity to become exposed to so many different shows and experiences. And like it became this whole education in the arts for me.
Absolutely. And you had incredible success as a dancer. You're an apprentice in the New York City Ballet by the time you're 18 and in the Corps shortly after. And then you became a soloist. And I'm wondering what drew you to choreography rather than staying focused solely as a performance dancer?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think I was always interested in creative process and kind of having a hand in the bigger picture of making something. And coming to New York and going to the School of American Ballet, I was exposed to a lot of the work being performed and presented at the New York City Ballet. Because the school has a very strong relationship with the company, they would offer tickets almost every performance to the students to come if they wanted to. It was optional. And I would go every night and I would watch these ballets from different vantage points, sometimes from the very high up fourth ring, sometimes from the front row of the orchestra, and just study a lot of these ballets and a lot of them that I got to see multiple times over. And at that point, I wasn't sure. It's not like I was like, oh, I want to do this. It was more like, I'm really curious about choreography, just like as a form. And so I just couldn't get enough of it. And I think like the exposure to some of those great ballets just led me to pursue the act of choreography myself. So that's really kind of where it all came from.
I love the idea of like you as a student going to see shows from different vantage points and seeing how story fits together. I'm sure that there's this, the answer to this like would change depending on when in your career I'd ask you it, but I'm curious to know what you think makes a good choreographer.
Oh yeah, that's a really good question. I think it's about having the discipline to, you know, the waking up every day and showing up and pouring yourself into the process, into the craft, into like all the nitty gritty details, and having that, again, like the discipline of the routine to do that. I think that's like half the battle. And then I think in order to be a choreographer, you have to have this very specific kind of mind that is a mixture of like mathematics and imagination. Because so much of choreography is about understanding the parameters, understanding the limitations, understanding like how casting structure breaks down, how like the dimensions of the stage space can be interpreted. So that's a big part of what makes a good choreographer. And then the last thing I would say is like the ability to be very organized. There's a lot that goes into making a choreography, and it's not just about like being in the studio and you know, letting inspiration strike in the moment. I think I would say that it's about 75% of the preparation and the work outside of the studio, and then 25% of the work inside of the studio with other artists. So it's about that big picture ability to organize.
People seldom talk about that when it comes to artists, but that is sometimes the thing that makes the difference between somebody who gets to achieve the kind of heights that you've achieved in your career and continue to, and you know, somebody who falls short, like that organizational mind piece.
Yeah, and there's like kind of like sometimes the process or like the role of a choreographer gets romanticized to be like you picture a choreographer in a studio with a dancer and like, and they make up a step and that's kind of it. But you're right, there's much more that goes into it and just like a very extensive amount of preparation, I would say.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. Coming up, more of guest host Talia Schlanger's conversation with Justin Peck.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Okay, I want to listen to a piece of music together. Ready?
Okay.
Okay, that's a bit of Come On, Feel the Illinois from the album Illinois by Sufjan Stevens. Justin, your latest project, your new show, is an adaptation of this album, one of Sufjan Stevens' biggest albums. And, you know, you've said that you were about 17 when you first heard the record. Can you take me through what it was like for you when you listened to these songs for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, this album is so extraordinary. It's this massive bundle of music. It's almost 90 minutes of music that Sufjan wrote and assembled into this brilliant composition. And I think what I love about it is, first off, the scale of it. Sometimes the album gets very big, very full, and almost like orchestrated. And then there's other songs on the album that feel very quiet and intimate and almost like Sufjan's whispering the poetry of these lyrics into your ear. And all the while, there's very novel and brilliant storytelling that runs through it. And so it also tackles a lot of themes of coming of age. And when Sufjan wrote it, he was in his early 20s. And so there's a lot of sense of discovery and sort of finding one's place in the world and trying to understand the world and trying to understand oneself a little bit better. And these are universal themes that I think a lot of us have experienced or have gone through. And so it's a giant meal to get to chew through. And I loved it when I first heard it. And then it continued to be something that fed me for the next almost two decades to come. So it's an album that I would return to constantly and find more and more inside of it and peel back more layers of it. And so it's challenging too, in a way. And that's always been something that I've been drawn to as an artist.
Yeah. I mean, there are universal themes for sure. I think that the album resonates with lots of different people, but there's something very special about this album. I think that there's so much mystery and so much open-endedness in the lyrics and in the themes that I think people who really love Illinois hear themselves in these stories in different ways. And I'm wondering what like the personal thing was that resonated with you about this record, especially when you were young and you were hearing it.
You know, in a song like Chicago, which is maybe the most well-known song on the album, when you read the title, you think, oh, this is just a song about Chicago. But it's actually, what it really is about is a young person's journey transitioning from their small hometown to the idea of the big city and what that, the kind of exhilaration of what that feels like and the adrenaline that comes with it. And that's something that many of us have experienced and certainly something that I've personally experienced. And it was a song that I was able to connect quite closely with as a young person, having heard the album maybe within the first year of my transition from California to New York City. It just felt like it spoke to me on a very personal level. And there's so many like little sort of individualized package stories throughout this record that I feel like it's taken me almost like years to unpack what they are and what they're saying and what kind of like how to interpret them. And I think that's been the joy of getting to create this show, to create Illinois, and finally get to share it with audiences.
I want to jump into another song that is maybe a less obviously universally relatable song that's on the album and also consequently in the show. Have a listen to this.
His father was a drinker and his mother cried in bed. Folding John Wayne's t-shirts when the swing set.
That's a song by Sufjan Stevens called John Wayne Gacy Jr. about the infamous serial killer. And that's also part of your show. How did you figure out the story that you wanted to tell that would weave together coming of age with songs like this?
Yeah, absolutely. We spent a long process trying to find how to tell a story through these songs, through this album. And one of the big breakthrough moments for us was designing the show to take place around a campfire. And that this would be a kind of entry point into storytelling for the characters within the show. So we arrive at this campfire and sort of one by one, these characters come forward and they open up their journals, which are filled with their own writings. And in the safe space of this kind of writing retreat, they tell a story. And one of those stories is the tale of John Wayne Gacy Jr. And the reason why that concept works so well is because a lot of the music that Sufjan wrote has this kind of DIY quality. It's the type of music that feels like it could be played around a campfire, or even certain songs that feel like they could be sing-alongs. Mm. And then other moments that feel like they could get sort of dark and almost like telling a ghost story. In this case, for John Wayne Gacy Jr., it's telling the story through a murder ballad, which is a very kind of historic American form of folk music. There's a lot of murder ballads, especially from the 1930s and 40s, that were written. And I think like that was a big influence on Sufjan when he wrote this song. And in this particular campfire short story, we see the whole group bring this tale to life before our eyes, and it has this kind of very measured, almost simple, like pantomime expression of the psychology of the serial killer. There's a lot to be unpacked in the story of John Wayne Gacy Jr. and how that figure affected like queer communities in terms of like, you know, he targeted a lot of young men. And at the end of this song, of this story that's shared, we finish with a kind of panic attack that the storyteller experiences, and he's comforted by a few other gay men around him, and they just bring his breath back to a more balanced homeostasis. And that breath is created by Sharon Nova, one of our singers in the show, and it's one of the most poignant moments of the show. And you can just feel the entire theater lean in, and you could hear a pin drop at this very moment, because it's a very sensitive and emotional moment of the show. And so there's a lot of moments like this that run throughout the show that are expressed in very physical ways, or like using movement or using gesture or using even like mundane qualities of the human body, like our breath.
That was so beautifully described. I can feel it too as you're saying it. This isn't the first time that you've collaborated with Sufjan Stevens, and it's important to say that he hasn't been as involved in this project. He's had a really rough year, losing his partner and also recovering from illness. And just as we close out, I'm wondering what effect that has had on how you feel about staging Illinois, especially as somebody who's looked up to Sufjan and had his work be so formative in your own creative life.
Yeah, it's complicated for me. You know, I really feel for Sufjan on a personal level right now. I know he's really going through a lot with his life, like you described. And it's a bit eerie for me to be telling this story, which it all derives from the music Sufjan wrote, but it's a fine balance of light and dark. So there's a lot of darkness in this music, and that's been a guiding force for the story that we've created. And I'll say that like a big aspect of this show is how we deal with grief and how we process grief and how we can overcome the experience of losing someone that's very close to us. And I know that it has this like meta thing going on because Sufjan's dealing with that at this very moment. And yet this is music that he wrote almost 20 years ago, and it's being reflected back through this show in its own way. So we think about him a lot, and, you know, we really aim to do right by him. And I think the thing that gives me hope and joy is that I receive a lot of personal letters and notes and messages and just like, you know, spoken feedback from audience members and strangers and also friends who have been really touched by this material, both the music and the show itself, and how it's helped them just understand something or each other or themselves or the world a little bit better. And so that's been like one of the best things. And I can't help but think that Sufjan would appreciate that as well.
I think that's what really good art is, huh?
Yeah, it's, you know, we aim for that. Yeah. So, and then sometimes when it happens, it's like we don't even know how we got here or how it's doing that. So a lot of times it feels out of our control, and I feel like I'm really savoring every moment of the experience of this show.
Well, congratulations, and thanks for making the time to talk about it, Justin.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's choreographer, director, and dancer Justin Peck talking to Q guest host Talia Schlanger about Justin's new production, Illinois, which opened on Broadway last week. And that is it for the show this week. Oh, God, I got millennial nostalgia, which is an uncomfortable nostalgia because I'm not ready for nostalgia yet. But boy, oh boy, it's here. The other conversation we have up today, speaking of nostalgia, Richard Thomas, who you might know from your own nostalgia, I'll stop saying that word soon. He was in the Waltons in the 1970s, not the band. He was on the show. He played John Boy. He now plays Atticus Finch in the new touring production of To Kill a Mockingbird. You would think he wouldn't like when, during the curtain call, as Atticus Finch, people shout out, "Good night, John Boy." He doesn't mind it. A really fun conversation with Richard Thomas over on our podcast, wherever you got this one. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.